antes del gobierno de Estados Unidos es inhumana.
No tiene sentimiento, porque la gente que emigra de Centroamérica no emigra ahora prácticamente porque no hay trabajo. No solo por eso, hay dos razones por cual inmigran, que una es la pobreza, otra es la delincuencia. Los jóvenes ya no inmigran solo por venir y trabajar. Es más, los migrantes, los que llegan a Estados Unidos es a trabajar. Ellos no van buscando, no llegan a que los mantengan, sino que ellos a trabajar. Entonces, eso no se pone a pensar el presidente de Estados Unidos.
Rosa Filomena Gómez pidió apoyo para la búsqueda de las madres y solidaridad para los migrantes que se ven forzados a abandonar su patria y a su familia.
Que nos apoyen a nosotras las madres centroamericanas que hemos perdido a nuestros hijos, porque sabemos que con entre más gente se une a nosotros, más posibilidades tenemos de encontrar, y también que apoyen al inmigrante que va.
En España, solo 10 después de que la alta corte ordenara que los ciudadanos paguen el impuesto hipotecario y no los bancos, el gobierno anuncia que legislará para que ocurra lo contrario.
And rolling your way next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, and hopefully to reappear at 101.3 FM one of these years. We're still searching for a studio, we're still looking for a transmitter site, and we're still a little bit nervous about the FCC, or at least the landlords who might put us up are. But you can find us at freakradio.org. You can find us on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org under the name of at least my show, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. So that's the place to go if you're interested in this particular twice-a-week show, which happens on Sundays at 9:30 in the morning, running through often till 3 in the afternoon, and, of course, on Thursday evenings, 6 to 8. Today we're going to focus on the upcoming search for a campsite. I guess more than two decades ago, we called such a thing Camp Quest. I don't know if we're going to call it that again, but that's kind of what we're doing. We're planning to, some of us, in a protest or a search for places for people to lay down their heads as the winter essentially looms. We're going to be beginning at the town clock, right across from the town clock, I should say, at the main post office, at 4 o'clock on Thursday, November 15th. That's a week away from today. And we'll then be going to a spot to be announced to lay down our sleeping bags and rest, because the city has refused to provide any kind of adequate winter shelter for people. And it's also refused to stop ticketing people for essentially resting, although they're not using the sleeping ban, the municipal code against sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, so much anymore as the closed area ordinance 3.04, part of the Parks and Rec regulations, which essentially make it illegal to be in a park after dark, along with various other ordinances that are now police and ranger laws of choice to move out, or disappear homeless people from places where they don't want them to be. In any case, we had an interview with, I should say, a discussion session with the new head of the Parks and Rec Department, Tony Elliott, who replaces or kind of oversees now Carol Skurich, who is the interim director who replaced, for the time being, Mauro Garcia, for all you who want to know names of old. Anyway, let's get into the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, two issues particularly have interested me of late on this show. One of them is rent control, which looks like it's gone down the tube, at least in terms of Measure M and Proposition 10. And also the latest lies of the Santa Cruz City Council around the issue of most elementary homeless survival winter shelter stuff, where they have essentially closed down, well, they have declared they're closing down the River Street Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground on November 15th, and then transport some of those folks to the Association of Faith Communities, sort of half as big as last year's winter shelter. That's happening on the 7th Avenue, and I understand from Steve Plates there's also going to be a women's and children's reopening of the Laurel Street Salvation Army shelter, although not so you could actually walk up to it, mind you, but be discreetly bussed in so as not to contaminate the neighborhood. And, of course, you have to no doubt pass some of their entrance tests. I haven't heard the details of this. In any case, the city has violated its promises to maintain the Barbed Wire Boneyard Campground till April. And there's a little confusion in my mind, perhaps because I'm listening a little too much to Steve Plates, who's a homeless persons legal assistance project and is also chairing of a number of boards. He claims that there's no money for the program, really, to extend as it was going to extend from, well, first it was going to end in June. The River Street Campground was going to end in June. Then it was going to end in August. Then it was going to end in April. Then they abruptly announced in September, or maybe it was in October, just this last October, that they were going to, end it in November and siphon some of the folks off to the winter shelter program. They had previously forgotten to even establish a winter shelter program for the coming winter. And so they kind of, they hustled to make up for it with this sort of half capacity program out on 7th Avenue to be buttressed by a women in shelter addition at the, less than last year, at least in terms of who they're letting in. And again, I'm taking some of this from Steve Plates. Don't know if it's actually true. Who knows if he does either. Maybe I'll give him a call and see if he wants to cite some more of his sources. Anyway, this, what I call a hoax, this sort of sellout of the homeless, along with continued harassment of homeless people for trying to find their own places to sleep, usually in places like the Poganip, Harvey West, in vehicles. They can't do it in San Lorenzo Park. That's been fenced off. Or in various other parks, which are now locked and gated at night. Post office steps are now gated at night. It's a whole massive movement to move the homeless further out of town and out of sight and ignoring some basic needs. So one of the people that bears a significant amount of responsibility for the way at least Parks and Rec rangers behave, although there is some controversy as to how much they're under the guidance, influence, and control of Andy Mills, the Santa Cruz Police Department, is the new head of Parks and Rec, Tony Elliott. And last Tuesday, a number of us from Conscience in Action, at the initiative of Phil Posner, who's a local rabbi and former freedom sleeper and former freedom marcher way back in the 60s to demand the end of Jim Crow laws down in Mississippi and thereabouts. We decided it would be prudent to chat with Tony and get his opinions. Of course, what you're going to hear are mostly us giving the usual speeches, but you get some sense of, maybe you don't, I'm not quite sure we actually do, but you'll hear what his responses are, which are essentially, I got to say, not much. Amiable fellow, very nice, knows how to handle the public. He's earnest, He claims to want to do the right thing, but he would make no commitments whatsoever, or he didn't anyway. And I have to say that the group of us did not press as hard as we should have, I would think, for getting those commitments. I guess part of the theory was that this is your initial meeting. First you do the nice guy, and then later you come in with the harsher stuff, which is okay if you actually have a bathroom to take a shit in. But most homeless people have a problem that they don't most of the time, whereas most of us activists with conscience in action, in fact, everybody in the room, was housed. Homeless people didn't make it that situation. They were invited, but they didn't get there to the Tuesday afternoon meeting. And, well, I'm going to just play this for you to hear, with occasional interruptions, both for a little musical relief and also for my endless and inevitable commentary. So, here we go.
We're all late because it says...
We'll have one more, do you think?
Yes. So those present are Ursula, Phil, Steve, Tony, and Nick.
Yes. Okay. Good deal. Great.
We're all late.
Yeah,
here's
my card.
We're all late because it said 3 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. Well, meeting adjourned then.
Yeah.
All right. Here's my card.
You can say, we met with these radicals. It was the easiest meeting I've ever come to.
And that is, the man who says the easiest meeting is Phil Posner, mentioned before.
Can I give you one of mine?
Great. Thank you very much.
Oh, wait, I give you one of mine.
Yeah, you're going to have that's really my day job.
Here we are exchanging business cards.
My day and night job.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, yeah, so I'll introduce myself really quickly. We'd love to kind of learn a bit about you all. I've seen some faces, I think, in a city council meeting, or I've heard your names, but I don't know a whole lot about what you all do, honestly. So just wanted to kind of meet today and learn about what you do and kind of what's going on in the city from your perspective, but really just kind of get to know you all, meet you all.
Where are you from, Tony?
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Ah, just recently, or...?
Just moved here about 2 months ago.
Right. Imported for this job? Or?
That's right.
Gotcha.
Yep.
What did you do there? What kind of work?
I was the parks director for the city of Fishers, Indiana. So Fishers is a kind of a booming suburb just northeast of Indianapolis.
Were your parks fenced off there as well as here?
We have some fenced off parks in Fishers. We closed parks periodically.
At night generally or not?
I'm sorry?
At night, generally?
Make sure let him finish.
I mean, so we'll talk about that. But
I'm curious about that.
What size of town is it?
So it's 90,000. 20 years ago, it was 5,000. Mm-hmm. So it's growing very quickly. It's on the course to be 140,000.
Yeah. So about the size of this.
And you might notice when I asked if the parks were fenced off, it was immediately interrupted by Steve Plaich, who did this numerous times during this interview. Sort of, I'm not sure whether he didn't like the fact that I was taking up time that he felt should have been used with other questions, or whether he didn't want to offend Tony Elliott, or whether it wasn't on the specific agenda he was concerned about. But it often seemed that the edge got taken off by that kind of diversion. But, we did get some information. And we began, of course, as you can hear, by trying to understand where Tony Elliott came from and why. What his previous experience was, what kind of a administrator he was, where he had come from, and perhaps to be able to predict what kind of an administrator he would be here.
City. It's about 50% larger than the city.
Okay.
But everything is new. I mean, everything.
Yeah,
so
it sounds like it's
interesting in Fishers. It's so new and so many people have moved there and continue to move there that in many ways what I hear in Santa Cruz is that if you weren't born in Santa Cruz, you're not from Santa Cruz. I've heard that a couple times. In Fishers, if you've lived in Fishers for 10 years or 7 to 10 years, you're from there. So it's a community where a lot of people are moving to. It's because of the schools. The schools are really good. It's
this is Indiana.
This is Indiana. Yeah, Fishers, Indiana. So So as the parks director there for a number of years, I worked for the city manager before then. during my time there, we transitioned structure of government from a city management structure to a strong mayor structure. So our city manager actually had a bit of a crisis when our community voted to go to a city structure. Yeah.
And, of course, these kinds of questions or answers, you might say, really, I'm realizing as I listen to this, kind of miss the point. I mean, in this town he comes from, was there the kind of class war going on against homeless people that is happening here? Were the rents escalating hugely? Were more and more anti-homeless laws being put into effect? These questions, for some reason, I realize, as I listen to this, didn't really get asked.
So he left city management, he ran for mayor, and he was elected mayor. So our city manager is now the mayor of the city.
That's interesting because there is some discussion here.
This is Steve Plaich.
Elected mayor and district elections and moving away from the city manager centered type of government. Some people feel like that would be more responsive to people's needs and whatnot. So I'd be interested at some other point to learn a little more about how that all took place and what the community reaction was in terms of support for it, the pros and cons, because that is just about relatively the same size municipality or population that we have, so there's a lot of the same dynamic, I'm sure.
Exactly, exactly. So I'd be happy to share that.
It'd be interesting.
It was an interesting evolution.
Let's go around. Nicholas, you're next.
So I'm Nicholas Whitehead, and Rabbi Phil Posner and I formed this group, with other people, of course. It's called Conscience and Action.
Okay.
And we're interested in protecting the rights of particularly low-income or other marginalized people.
Sure.
That's our interest.
Yeah, okay. When did this group originally form?
About 6 months ago now, right? 8 months?
Maybe six or eight months.
Better. Okay.
Right. Sounds about right.
Yeah. What brought it together? What brought the...
Well, there was the immediate issue of the availability of bathrooms in general and in the Parks and Rec jurisdiction, and particularly the Loudoun-Nelson center one. That was the immediate cause.
I mean, as you may be aware, there are anti-bathrooms that open at all in town after 10 o'clock at night. So our unsheltered population, which according to the last census survey was about 1,000, that's just the city, just don't have anywhere to get the basic dignity that everybody should be accorded. So we have taken that really as one of the major efforts. And one of the things we have done is try to get the city to permit citizen-sponsored bathrooms. And we have ACLU, which I'm on the board, UNA, which I'm also on the board, Food Now Bomb, several other groups are willing to sponsor bathrooms and hand-washing stations at strategic places around town that would be open 24 hours a day. Our problem has been that we haven't been able to get the city to establish or recognize a permitting process to do it. Although Tony Condotti has done some research and he found that there is a section of the municipal code that allows to do that, there hasn't been the political will on council to do that. One of the things that we were able to achieve early by talking to the city manager was to get them to reopen the bathroom in San Lorenzo Park, because that had been closed for a long period of time before you're coming into town. And he didn't have any good reason why it had not been revisited or at least discussed to open it again. And as a result of our conversation with him, the next week they opened it. And now, of course, it's fluctuating with whatever had going on in the parks, which we'd like to hear more about.
It's closed.
And I did point out it's currently closed, the San Lorenzo Park bathrooms. And, of course, the reason that Bernal opened the bathrooms, I think, was not simply because he had a wonderful chat with us and then took off on a vacation in midsummer, but because we brought a number of people to City Hall in two protests and indicated that there was sort of growing resentment about the fact that people did not have a place to do the most elementary, essential things that also have to do with greater community health and safety. Steve Plaich has a particular interest in a project he suggested, which is sort of private bathrooms as a sort of a way of pushing the city to open its own he doesn't mean bathrooms, he means porta potties, which we proposed at this meeting with Martin Bernal 3 months ago. He's the current city manager. And in fact, we actually, well, Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs actually opened such a porta potty, which was shortly thereafter forced to shut or be taken away because of complaints from Parks and Rec and I think other city departments that had nothing to do with any real problems, but simply a bureaucratic insistence that you can't do it without clearing it with us, and we're not going to clear it with you, and you can't get a permit for this. And essentially that stopped the providing of a porta potty down at the post office area where it had been set up by Keith McHenry near Food Not Bombs to provide a little sort of decency in the morning and, well, just generally throughout the day. There is a broader concern about Parks and Rec that you'll see coming out or you'll hear coming out in this conversation, but that we expressed ourselves. It's not just the fact that Loudon Nelson bathrooms were shut at the end of February, and it's more that this was part of a growing kind of anti-homeless attitude that that evidenced itself at Loudon Nelson through the fence around Laurel Park, through increased Parks and Rec harassment of homeless people in Laurel Park, through a new set of rules about how long you could stay at Loudon Nelson if you use their so-called cafe, which was their new name for a little stand where they provided, I don't know, they sold coffee and some minor pastries and things of that sort. So the real issue would have been to ask Tony, and perhaps we will, Tony Elliott, what was the situation for homeless people in your town that you came from? And are you prepared to do something about this here? Is this a concern of yours? Or are you simply just going to listen to us nod, smile, shake our hands, and send us on our way?
Currently.
It's closed currently. Yeah. Right.
But that was one of the things that we had an early victory, we thought, just to get that open during the day for people who were unsheltered. So a lot of the focus is about 24-hour access to bathrooms, which there just currently is not in town.
And so that's city restrooms, so parks restrooms, city restrooms, that's library, I assume, as well, because they close up. But, I mean, that's across the board. So
yeah, across the board. They will give you, the council members will give you a long list of bathrooms that are public restrooms in the city, but none of those are open after 10 o'clock at night.
Okay.
You know, we're not disputing the fact that there are bathrooms situated around the city, and that some of them have been opened as a result of city council action. What we're saying is that none of them open after 10 o'clock
that's
at night.
Saying.
And it's a basic dignity issue for us, for the people that we, are advocating.
Same can we go around, Robert?
Yeah. And they will tell you that there are...
Well, you introduced them.
Well, he knows me.
You introduced him. You got my card, Robert Norris.
Yeah.
There are bathrooms. They're not bathrooms, as Steve has said, they're open at all at night, but there are some very sort of limited porta-potties that often aren't in the best of shape, don't have access to disability people, and so forth, that were opened under some pressure. Actually, it was before us that they opened them, I think, the two of them. And so the real issue to me, and the group I work with is called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is concerned with what this really is about, and that's why I was asking you questions about where you're coming from, whether you have a sort of an anti-homeless, get the disreputables out of town background, not because it's helping you choose,
right,
but because it's something you're stuck in the midst of. You get into this. I mean, this is... In other words, you have situations where public facilities are being closed, and the pretext is needle using, the children will see bad things, messy bathroom. You'll hear this. In fact, I brought along for you, we did an email series of demands that Izeth Ray, who was, of course, as you know, the director of Loudon Nelson, she finally released all these emails. We couldn't get Carol Skurich to give us the specifics, but we finally got them, at least through the emails that she has had with other agencies. You can decide yourself how current they are or how inclusive they are, but they don't seem to justify the kind of exclusion, which to me is an indication, along with the fence around the Loudon Nelson Park, which recently went up and gone around some other parks. It's pandering to a form of bigotry against poor people. Mm-hmm. And it's something that my group is particularly opposed to. I'm one of the members of the group Nick spoke of, the Coalition of Conscience in Action.
Mm-hmm.
And
you hear a lot of mm-hmms. That's Tony Elliott, Parks and Rec new boss, responding with lots of mm-hmm. What that really means, of course, is I hear you, I hear you, I hear you. I understand the English language you're using. It doesn't mean I agree with you, though it kind of tends to give the illusion. Politicians do that when they're talking with you, is my general impression. But let's take a brief step away for a little musical relief and return to this interaction with Tony Elliott, our new boss at Parks and Rec, or I should say their new boss. This is a song from Roy Zimmerman's Homeland Security album called Pumping Irony, which, of course, is a play on words on Arnold Schwarzenegger's Pumping Iron movie. He was also, of course, the governor of California about 20 years ago. So here's a little music around that.
In my office, there are pictures of my children's father. In my office, there are pictures of my wife's husband. In my office, there are pictures of all the people of California who are six-time Mr. Olympia. And they look good.
Pumping irony, pumping irony. In the land of no smoking, in the avocado, a big carnivorous cigar aficionado.
You all know me as a person with enormous money. You all know me as a guy who's got a lot of hummers. So I'll be the governor of all the people who contribute of California. I can't be bought, but I can be paid for. The Schwarzenegger with 2 G's.
Pumping irony, pumping irony. He's a Hollywood he-man who's in touch with women. Who knows how many of them voted to put him in?
I won't be swayed by special interest,
like experience or morals.
My inclinations never been to rest,
except upon his morals.
I don't confer, I don't negotiate with my associates. I don't associate, don't even thank my wife for all the crochet. I was welcomed with open arms, a penniless immigrant in California. So I voted for 187 to keep some Mexican from taking my charge.
Pumping irony, pumping irony. He's an alpha male Aryan for populism, a conservative who's liberal with his syllogism. Pumping irony.
And now back to Elliot meets Conscience in Action.
I'll let the rest of the gang take it from there.
Yeah. Really quickly on these organizations, so are these established nonprofits, or what is the structure? Are they just kind of...
They're unincorporated associations.
Okay.
They're a non-profit organization.
Yeah. Well, in particular, Robert's one is a long-standing...
Yeah.
Probably about 20 to 25 years at least.
Okay.
Been around a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, one
of
my questions was, get into more substantive things, is what is the current plan for San Lorenzo Park and the fencing and the restoration projects going on? What kind of timeline can we anticipate?
Yeah, so Grant Street Park and San Lorenzo Park, right, that we
referred
to. So on both of those, we don't have a set timeline.
What's being asked here, in case you missed it, is how long are the fences going to be up in these two parks? I haven't been over to Grant Park, but I've heard that at least San Lorenzo is fenced off, and I'm not sure what's going on with Grant, but San Lorenzo is a much larger place. It was last year, of course, last fall, the location of an actual homeless campground where the city, for the first time in its history, supplied porta-potties and washing stations and trash pickups, and also allowed homeless people the dignity of their own tents. The few that could go there, relative few, but more than the subsequent River Street campground afforded, and considerably more space, and considerably more privacy and access. You could actually walk in there, unlike the current River Street campground, which again is due to close in a week, in which you cannot walk in. I've not been able to go in there throughout the entire period there. Of course, I haven't tried terribly hard, but I've been waiting for an invitation, and I haven't gotten one. Nor have I been told by Susie O'Hara, who's the person running, sort of the higher-up who was running the campground under Chris Monteith, or I should say, who was over Chris Monteith. She's initially suggested there would be an opportunity for me to visit it, but that opportunity just never seemed to present itself.
We hope we can open both very soon. We're doing maintenance projects at both of those that we communicated. I think Martin Bernal, the city manager, communicated
those. I saw
his
statement about that, yeah.
At the last city council meeting. So we've got a whole list of items that we're taking care of in both those parks. So we hope to open up Grant Street, I'd say, within the next couple weeks. We've actually we've done a lot, definitely in the past couple of weeks. We did a volunteer initiative over the weekend on Saturday.
And this is the official story, that both these parks are closed for maintenance. But it's hard to believe that you need to fence off the entire park, including closing bathrooms that really can be accessed through the walkways that are remaining open, if you actually are doing maintenance on specific areas in the park. And you'll hear me ask questions about that, and you'll hear his answer that they were replacing plumbing in the bathroom and so forth. It's a superficial plausibility, and it may well be true. Of course, it's not been presented. This is the first time I've actually heard these. I'm tempted to call them excuses, but you might say reasons. Let's hear more.
I was out there personally, along with a lot of our team, our new park superintendent, who's also new. He's from Delaware.
What's his name?
Travis Beck.
How do you spell the name?
B-E-C-K.
Thanks.
So we were out there Saturday doing some projects, doing some work. So I'd say within the next couple of weeks we want to get those opened up. San Lorenzo, so I think a couple things. San Lorenzo will probably phase. So the
probably what?
We'll phase it. So the top level, kind of the top portion of San Lorenzo Park, will look to open up in the next few weeks or so.
And the bench lands
a little bit later, because the bench lands, we've got major irrigation failure that's been a can kicked down the road for a long time that we need to address in the bench lands. And then all of those grounds, too, are pretty well worn. It's a lot of just dirt.
Yeah, I've been by there just yesterday when I voted, and it's a lot of dirt patches, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, and that's that's an area that we'll probably keep closed for a while. We want to seed it. We want to top dress it. Look at the irrigation, see if that's something we can kind of spot fix. So we'll probably keep the bench lands closed for a while until we can kind of address those maintenance.
So philosophically, what you'll run up against is that some House Society will tell you that they believe that it's conspiratorial, that, you know, the closing of the River Street camp somehow has to do with the cyclone fencing put in San Lorenzo Park to further reduce the presence of homeless folks anywhere, and in particular in the parks if they happen to transition from the camp to the park or somewhere around there. And I'm neither here nor there about that, frankly, but it's just something that you will encounter.
And again, Steve spoke rather quickly there. In case you didn't catch it, he was saying some are suggesting that the San Lorenzo Park is being fenced off at just about the same time as the city's announcing it's closing the River Street campground. And in the past, last fall, people moved into San Lorenzo Park in greater numbers. They were there before, but they moved in greater numbers into San Lorenzo Park, partially encouraged by Chief Andy Mills, the Santa Cruz Police Department, when they had begun to be sleeping right outside the post office, and instead the post office put up a an earlier fence. Now they put up an even more hefty fence and a locked gate. That's happened in the last couple of weeks as regular listeners to the show and regular post office users are well aware of.
Yeah.
Philosophically.
Yeah, no, I understand. We were sensitive to that, too. I think, obviously, all of this is kind of at the same time. When we closed the parks, that was, well, let me kind of think about this. So I'm going to forget the date of the River Street Camp closure offhand, but mid-November-ish, I think, is
November.
That?
They might hang on about till mid-November.
Yeah. And then so they'll kind of transition the closure of that in phases. Ideally, Grant Street, again, I can't say concrete because I don't know exactly when this work will be done, but hopefully Grant Street and possibly even San Lorenzo will be open before that closure. So, again, that's not...
We're not suggesting that people are going to transition from the River Street Camp to camping out in Grant Street Park or to camping out in San Lorenzo Park. We're just saying that it's the appearance of kind of driving homeless folks out of public spaces generally, and that is something that belongs to people. You
know? Yeah.
And it seems that what Tony Elliott is saying right before Steve's comment was that before the River Street Campground closes, the repairs, so-called, in San Lorenzo Park and in Grant Street Park will be done. Now, there are some who have said that this closing of the River Street Camp is going to be taking place in sort of at intervals, starting in a week on the 15th, and then a week later some more will be sent over to the Association of Faith Communities 7th Avenue Shelter, and then a week later, the end of November, the last group will be sent. I don't know if any of this is accurate. That's the sort of the buzz, so to speak. But the claim is that all this stuff will be finished. All the repairs will be finished presumably by November 30th. That's what I hear Elliot suggesting, although he did say the benchlands might take longer. The benchlands, of course, is the area under the pedestrian bridge that goes over the San Lorenzo River, which connects downtown and the county building area, and that is still open right now. That is, you can walk there, but you better not linger on the grass because that would be, well, it's beyond the fences, so it's kind of hard to do unless you jump the fence and pitch your tents, as I think I once suggested back in 1995 to campers who were being threatened with being fenced out of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Campground, which was the Coral Street Open Air Shelter way back when, 23 years ago. But enough history. Let's hear some of the current situation.
Also, I understand.
Last year, as you probably have heard, Andy Mills of the SCPD and your predecessor, Mauro Garcia, specifically, if not directed, made it really clear they were tolerating and, in fact, supporting people sleeping in the benchlands because for a number of reasons, but they didn't like to see people sleeping downtown because it was, you know, unsightly and all that sort of thing. Also, there was an hepatitis A scare. And so they put in different facilities, which have since been removed. The closing, I don't quite understand why you're closing the bathrooms there, because you can get there through the walkways without traversing any of the other area. It seems like there's no other reason than to deter people from going into that area at all. Maybe you could explain that.
Yeah, so a lot of different things right there. So on the restrooms in particular, those are for maintenance. So a lot of the issues that we're finding, we in that sewer lateral that comes off of the restroom that goes to the main out of the street, out of Dakota, that was getting jammed up with all kinds of debris from the use of those restrooms. We installed essentially a daylight into that lateral so that we could clean it out periodically. Otherwise, we were having to call in the sanitation department to essentially...
What is a daylight, I'm sorry?
It's a lateral to the lateral. It's a
pipes connecting.
It's pipes. Yeah, it's a pipe that we can open up to clean out that pipe from the restrooms. And so we did that because of the debris and everything kind of getting jammed up in those pipes.
How long does that take to install such a pipe?
I don't know offhand how long it took.
I mean, it wouldn't take it. It would take weeks and weeks to install, and that has been closed for weeks and weeks.
Well, so that was done. That was done before. So that's been in. But the issue that we were facing, I think, in the restroom It was a number of steps of deferred maintenance in the restroom, but in the property, the remainder of the property, I'd say that, you know, we closed the entire thing down so we could get those projects done. But my point.
You know, you're not hearing an answer here to the question, why would it take weeks and weeks to install plumbing? I mean, maybe it does. I'm not a plumber. I'm not an expert in planning and that kind. It just doesn't seem that restoring, putting in a lateral pipe and changing the plumbing is going to take more than a month to do in a public facility that is important to be accessible to the entire community. Unless you have some ulterior motive. But here's more of what Tony Elliott had to say.
In that daylight, to be able to clean out the lateral, is that the use of those restrooms, or from time to time misuse of those restrooms, that they were leading to maintenance issues that caused us to have to take additional
steps. In the last 2 or 3 months?
Again, timing, I don't know. It was before my time, I would say that.
Can you find that out? That is to say, whether this closing was prompted in the last 3 months. Because the restrooms were only open for about 3 months.
That's about right. Is that right?
Like that. Mm-hmm. So if you can find, I'd like to know that specifically. If there were actual real problems, which we found did not seem to be the case in Loudoun Nelson, other than ordinary usage problems, then that would indicate, perhaps, to those of us who are suspicious, a different kind of agenda. So,
That was a specific request I made, which I hope to follow up on, which is to get specific documentation from Elliot about the actual particular problems that were involved when the reclosing of the San Lorenzo restrooms. That's, you might say, well, it's pretty picayune, you know. I mean, you're just meeting the guy, you know. Why are you coming down with this kind of demand? Well, because bathrooms closed means crap outside, means people embarrassed, means people with health threats because of that. I mean, not just, well, the people, of course, who are trying to use them without having places to wash their hands and so forth, but also just people generally who have to deal with human feces and piss that appears magically for some strange reason because of those dirty, dirty homeless elsewhere. And so it is an immediate issue, and it does require a specific answer. And also it goes to the credibility of Tony Elliott. I mean, you might say, well, he's new, he's just doing what he's told, and that's certainly has a lot of truth to it. But if he's parroting simply a line that, you know, he's hearing from someone else, and that line itself is horse shit, so to speak, then he's responsible for it. He's the boss of the Parks and Rec, as I pointed out to him. And it doesn't really need to be pointed out because it's clearly self-evident.
I think it was safe to say that, I mean, we closed all that down for maintenance. And I think we closed it down also in part because the attention that we were giving restrooms or other areas, and with any park, with any type of use, when a park is busy, we are doing kind of day-to-day maintenance. And so with the closures, it allows us to get ahead of a lot of those projects.
You're going to get the emails. You're going to get the records to show any kinds of actual vandalism or damage or difficulties in the previous 3 months. You can get that for us?
I can sure try. I mean, again, it's before my time, so.
You are the head of the department.
Right. I understood. That's right.
Ursula has had a chance, and then I want to introduce myself.
Sure. Yeah.
And my... What I don't understand is, if you closed the bathroom down, why didn't you put porta potties in for people so that they still would have access to toilets?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to take something away, please replace it. It's not as good as a brick and mortar bathroom, but it certainly would have been a lot helpful to people.
So I think that's great feedback. And we went into this whole thing thinking, hey, we're going to close this down for a period of time. Playground stayed open, so we're thinking of the users that are still there, people just kind of walking through on the paths. And so kind of in the back of our, not even in the back of our mind, but part of the strategy in closing this is if or when we need to add restrooms, we will do so. We have not heard that. I haven't heard that until now. We can certainly do that while these are closed, but I appreciate you mentioning that.
Well, went in for wadding for water and had, Robert, am I right, two Parks and Recreation people came and got him for trespassing and two policemen on an interview that you had. person was...
I do a radio show as well.
Right.
That's what I'm recording this
for. For water. He wanted water, and they...
RB West.
Yeah. They came and gave him a hard time for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what he was looking for, was water.
Who's they?
Homeless guy who was interviewed on my show who said he was...
His name was Steve.
Steve Conover. He lives in a vehicle. His partner is in a hospital or a nursing home in serious condition. He's mm-hmm. himself not in the best of health. And, you know, like many people in Santa Cruz, and he needed to get access to a drinking fountain mm-hmm. in RV West. He was immediately accosted by people under your direction management. I'm sure you didn't know about it. But this is what goes on regularly mm-hmm. toward people who are outside. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're a newcomer here. It's hard for you to sweep anything away with a snap of your fingers. But you do have some power, I would assume, as the head of this department.
And let's take a musical break.
I just spent some time up in San Francisco, which is a city I love, and you know, that's not unusual, I suppose. I was born there. I spent several years of my adulthood there as a child. They want to name a street after Allen Ginsberg. You got to love that. It's a one-way alley. You have to go up the wrong way. If you got a Hummer, you'll never make it. It's called a follow-up. Come on. I was there not too long ago, too, for the 30th anniversary of the Summer of Love. It was a great event. You know, the Jefferson facelift played. There was a loitering contest, and... I spent a lot of time at the hemp booth because it is more comfortable than cotton. And I've never had a pair of pants to stay lit that long. But it was a weird event, too, because, you know, no nudity, unless you count baldness. And no theme song. Weird, right? And that's where I thought I could help. So I took off my clothes and wrote this little song.
If you mellowed out and got your head together, then somehow you misplaced it. Meant to put an end to hate and war and poverty and prejudice and people who dress in too tight leather. But you spaced it. If your friends are grateful you're not dead, and you're the only one on your ward who remembers what the dormouse said. If you're all tied-eyed and starting to slide, I'd have to say you're a psychedelic relic, a wilted flower child that the FBI has filed away. A psychedelic relic like me. You stop to wonder who you really are, and it takes you a minute. If you can't remember where you parked your car, and you're in it. If you tune in, turn on, and your teeth drop out. If I say yellow matter, custard, semolina, pilchard, sitting on a cornflake, crab, a lock, a fish, and you can tell what the hell I'm talking about.
all the time. You're a psychedelic relic, lost in a purple haze. I can see it in your paisley eyes. A psychedelic relic like me. And if you take a step outside your mind and you get locked out and left behind, stuck in a mental Mississippi, if you have yourself a real bad trip, and if you get busted in your hip, and now you're an artificial hippie. If you prefer hallucination to the nation as it is, you're a psychedelic relic. You're a psychedelic relic. Quite tragically, you're a psychedelic. Join me on that, won't you? You're a psychedelic relic. That's good, one more time. You're a psychedelic relic. If your waistline is expanding faster than your consciousness, you're a psychedelic relic. If your turn signals go left, right, and flashback, you're a psychedelic relic. If you wear your ear hair in ponytails, if you still believe in peace and love, you're a psychedelic relic like me.
Well, we got a lot of agey jokes and fat jokes and, oh, aren't those hippies stupid and dopey and out of time and out of date, that sort of thing. And it's, frankly, I don't like it because it's a series of stereotypes that they were using back in the 60s to attack counterculture people. And it seems to me unfortunate that Zimmerman does, but he does. Back to Tony Elliott and Conscience and Action.
I want to focus on the specifics of Larry Nelson Community Center
at Park and Rec.
We get to hear Micah Posner on the phone. I should say Phil Posner on the phone with his son, Micah Posner.
It's a very social, physical,
so bear with us here.
Situation that you're entering. And so I think you need a little definition on exactly what's happened there. As we see it.
Sure.
we see that there aren't quite a lot of homeless people who use that park.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one country. Then there are other people.
Micah, what?
Other people in the community.
No, it's at 2 o'clock.
Used to that being a neighborhood facility, because it is a community center.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be people who got used to parking their car there. How about a disabled person parking their van there and going in and using the bathroom? Now, all that stopped. The rules are totally strict. I've asked the staff there. And they said they're under strict orders that there are no exceptions to the rule that they must be, a user of a bathroom must be participating in a class or other public event inside the center. Okay? So there aren't any exceptions for elderly people. There aren't any exceptions for disabled people.
Or people who are ill?
Yeah. People who have medical
conditions. Some kind.
So I would request that, as an immediate step, or as soon as you possibly can, make a definite exception for disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the ones who probably suffer the most of not being able to use those bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think that's reasonable, and not too risky from your point of view, not too risky to do that. I mean, are disabled people the most likely ones to abuse the bathrooms? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm Phil Posner. I'm the one that sent you the initial letter. I've been a congregational rabbi most of my life.
Okay.
I'm now retired. Been rabbi 50 years. I served in synagogues.
Oh, okay.
Congregations.
Yeah.
With Steve,
we formed a organization called the Homeless Depot Project, which would have been an opportunity to find places to provide homeless people with shelter. Mm-hmm. But then Robert and I were talking about an organization that needed to exist in Santa Cruz, which committed itself to conscience, values, but also action. Mm-hmm. So we call it Conscience in Action.
Okay.
My doctorate, I have a doctorate in empathy. And it's interesting that Police Chief Mills, I don't know if you know this, but he's from a seminary. And he has spoken publicly about his concerns about homeless people. Now, he doesn't always do what we would like him to do, but personally, when he came here, you don't know this, he wrote an editorial, an op-ed piece in the Sentinel about homelessness. And he basically told his patrolman to stop giving citations for people sleeping on the street.
Mm-hmm.
My hope, now, to me that was really significant because he was hired by the city manager.
Yes.
Now, the city manager could have directed that, but it didn't happen until Police Chief Mills took a more of assertive action.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very appreciative of the fact that you are willing to meet with us. You're a brand new guy on the, and that takes a certain amount of kindness and courage on your part. But my hope is that you too, like Chief Mills, will exercise some of your own personal empathy relative to these issues. Because most of us think that it's not going to happen without the city manager's overall agreement. But he hired you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to him and say, those guys are right. Bathrooms need to be open at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, I talk about this all the time, imagine you're a woman and you have your period.
And Phil, of course, speaks very eloquently about this issue. And it's never really been clear whether City Manager Bernal, who essentially hired Chief Mills and I think appointed Mauro Garcia, the former Parks and Rec guy, had previously known what was going to happen in terms of laying off of homeless people at night. I mean, it seemed very serendipitous, or should we say coincidental at least, that this was done. It was done a year before the September 4th Martin v. Boise decision, which essentially threw out the Boise law against sleeping and camping and essentially ruled that it was cruel and unusual punishment unless a city could show, and that's anywhere in the nine-state area, the Ninth Circuit Court, I think it's nine states, that it covers, the federal court, unless they can show they have room for every single homeless person, they can't tell a homeless person he can't sleep at night, generally in the city. There are ways around it, presumably, time, place, and manner kinds of, well, you can sleep here, but you can't sleep there. But Santa Cruz hasn't done that. And it continues to criminalize people in the parks, which is the main place people can go to sleep without getting on private property in people's hair. And we're talking about public property here, the right to essentially use public property as you need to in order to survive. However repugnant that may seem to conservative people who want to reserve private property for those who own it or rent it. And I don't think this was done out of the compassion of Garcia and Mills' hearts. I think they saw it as, a way of saving money because all they were doing with moving people around and giving them tickets that they couldn't pay was adding to the costs of the court system, the police system, the Parks and Rec, Rangers' costs. And they weren't really pleasing any of the population that were filing complaints because the people wanted to see these problems disappear, and they didn't disappear. They simply moved to another part of Santa Cruz, as continues to happen, because the housing accommodations aren't there. That became the mythology, of course. We just got to build housing. That'll work. Housing, housing. And so they talked a lot about housing and did very little about it. And they eliminated the interest in emergency shelter for the last few years, though there wasn't much done about that before either. And in any case, you have the situation where they actually had to accept the fact that people got to sleep somewhere, and so they opened up San Lorenzo Park, and then this sort of very small, cramped campground out at River Street, which they claimed would be open till April, and then they suddenly closed it again, prompting us to declare a protest on November 15th and assert we're going to find a campground ourselves that we're going to set up and we're going to use. Homeless people, of course, did this before themselves and are continuing to do it, regardless of what a few activists do or regardless of what the city does, because they have to find someplace to sleep. Human beings sleep at night. That's just generally how it is. Not everybody, of course, but generally that's the way it goes. So here's more.
Mm-hmm. And it's 2 a.m. It's outrageous. Mm-hmm. Now, I admit it's a complex issue. When you're talking about the whole issue of security and all of that stuff. So that's why Ursula made up a list, as you've seen, mm-hmm. of some suggestions, some of which are more valid than others, but some of them are definitely valid and opportunities, but they're only going to happen with your empathy.
And no, you don't. I think Phil is, again, he has this belief that any particular bureaucrat can be appealed to on the basis of their empathy, which I think is preposterous myself, but that's a view shared by a lot of people. Still, there are ways of appealing to the more common sense, even bureaucratic priorities, to keep the costs down, to keep the complaints down, to avoid the lawsuits. I mean, these are very practical reasons for dealing with these issues. Also, Elliot was given a list of solutions, possible solutions, that was put together by Ursula of the Conscience and Action Group. We handed that to him. We also handed him a listing of all the supposed complaints mentioned in the email that justified the closing of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms. And the list, which went through 4 pages, if you look at the actual specifics, was very, very limited in terms of actually justifying a locking out of the community from the bathrooms and not providing any alternate facilities. And Elliot has these documents in his hands, and he has access to the original emails from which they were, of which they are a summary. So the ball is in his court, and let's play ball and hear a little more.
With your commitment to say, there are people out there suffering, and this city needs to do something to help make that change.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that conscience-wise, we will influence you. But we are prepared to, you know, this is conscience in action. So I'm not going to be here, but our group, as you may or may not know, on the 15th of this month is going to be doing something publicly in terms of an action item to call attention to the, in terms of the community, about how we believe this suffering's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all in all, we appreciate your meeting with us. We hope that you will listen and exercise some empathy on these issues.
Yeah. You're invited as a speaker, by the way, if you wish to speak to the group that will be assembling on the 15th.
Appreciate it. I think in this meeting, I think one thing that would be very helpful to me, and obviously not being from here, is to understand a little bit big picture. So the city and the Parks Department, we are, you know, we're kind of one player, right? And a big player, certainly. In all things, you know, focused on the city. But I'm curious, you know, to kind of hear about you guys and some of these different groups. What are the other key stakeholders? I've heard quite a bit about the county and what the county is doing. Some of these other, it seems like there are a lot of different nonprofit groups. I don't know if you all can kind of weigh in, not to speak on their behalf, but...
Well, one of them is Food Not Bombs, Keith McHenry, who's very active in Conscience and Action, and somewhat Huff, right? And so Keith is a major player because he runs food. You know what Food Not Bombs is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's an incredibly dedicated guy. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely a major player.
Okay.
And he's important in this issue because he was willing to put out porta potties and pay for them at one point.
He did do it.
Still willing to do it.
He's still willing to do it. And the city removed them.
This is from
maybe we moved
the Porta Potty.
No, it's from the area in front of the post office.
Yeah.
What you might want to do, by the way, is visit their meal. It's at 4 to 6 Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
And they do it every weekend. And it's large meal. You may assume if you've driven by.
Where does that take place?
In front of the main post office.
Okay.
Where they recently put up another fence similar to the fence around Loudoun Nelson Center.
I see.
It's the same kind. Mm-hmm. Also, your predecessor, Mauro Garcia, in conjunction with Andy Mills, not only did they suspend what we call the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, the ordinance says after 11 you can't sleep or lay out blankets, but he also suspended the, at least in terms of enforcement, the trespass ordinances in the park after dark, after closing. This is something you could do too without a formal, you know, action by the city council. He just did it because he felt that that was the only way to deal with a situation where people needed a place to sleep, and they're going to be looking and finding places to sleep this winter, instead of running people all over the town, you know, moving the pier to there, giving them citations they can't pay, and, you know, are simply going to cause more trouble.
Which is really significant, because we had gone to the city council innumerable times asking them to get rid of the ban against sleeping in public places, and we got nowhere. My son Micah, who was a city councilman at the time, of course supported our position. But the city council itself refused to get rid of that ban. And here comes Chief Mills, and he basically, you know, dealt with the issue. So again, that's why we're saying you guys must have hopefully some amount of power and initiative that you can exercise.
Yeah.
And obviously use us in any way that we can, and we basically think the public agrees with us. We totally believe that most of the public, they have their problems with homeless people, but most of the public believes that homeless people should have bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that may or may not be true. At any rate, as far as the county is concerned, they are more interested in providing shelter. So all of their collaborative efforts between the city and county have been primarily about creating shelter.
Okay.
They have not, to our knowledge, done anything to really make 24-hour accessible bathrooms available in the city, or the county for that matter. So they're not a player in that. There are also the warming centers you hear about. They have nothing to do with establishing 24-hour access bathrooms in the city.
Okay.
It's really mostly the people who, Conscious Action, Food Now Bombs, Huff, and then the people who've got involved with the citizen-sponsored bathroom effort, which is the ACLU, United Nations Association, and the like. Those.
Although Steve, who has no love for Brent Adams, they've kind of been at odds for years, is kind of glossing over or ignoring the fact that Adams has for years worked on exposing the bathroom deficiency and also going around cleaning up bathrooms to draw public attention to it. And, of course, I don't think he's ever turned anyone away from who went to one of his a warming center nights when they on one of the few nights when they were open. I don't know if that's the case with the 24-hour storage office that he now runs out on Felker Street, but I want to give due credit to everyone. And in fact, I think what we may do, looks this interview does go on for another half hour. I'm going to play a little bit more of it, and then we're going to, I guess, postpone the rest of it until the Sunday show and catch up with a few other things.
Those folks, you'll hear those names. What would be helpful, because this is a city manager-centered government, and you are probably the city manager, but nevertheless, you would have his ear since he has hired you, and you're going to be working collaboratively with him. You could, if you decided, having thought about citizen-sponsored bathrooms and whether or not it's a possibility, you could mention to him that, you know, you think that perhaps they should look at that a little more closely and urge the city council, which city manager can do, to establish a permitting process so we can get this thing moving. That's been the loggerhead. You know, we have money available, we have people wanting to do it, we're willing to pay the funds, we're willing to find strategic places, we're willing to do some of the maintenance ourselves in cooperation with the city and county.
And some of us have done some of the maintenance.
We're willing to do that. Well, let's talk about the future, not the past. We're willing to do that, but we can't get past the city council's lack of political will to at least, you know, look at a permitting process and say, oh, here's what you can do. And if
And this idea, you know, it isn't in theory a bad idea. This is the kind of superficially practical idea that Steve Plaich sometimes, well, has come up with. I don't know if I can cite other examples. Perhaps I can. None come to mind right now. But the idea of asking him to go to the city manager, to go to the city council, to pass a law is, you know, it's a kind of a labyrinthine process. It's a very attenuated, you know, one thing has to connect to another, has to connect to another, has to go through a legal channel and so forth. And it's, dare I call it far-fetched? I mean, it's far-fetched to believe that it's likely to happen in any reasonable amount of time, in my belief. But on the other hand, you know, every push is important here. And I mean, I'm not ruling it out. It's just my thought that it's, well, it's what I've said.
You can just, you know, if you think that that is an idea worthy of consideration by the city manager and by the city council, because, you know, we as citizens are ready to step up and do these things ourselves. We believe that the city government should be doing these. It's a tragedy and a shame and a disgrace, really, in our community that they haven't done it already. But we're willing to get past that and either work collaboratively with them or do it ourselves. We just want the opportunity. And so we haven't been accorded the opportunity to do what we can for the people that we believe deserve some basic dignity.
And let's leave it there for now and catch another a bit of musical respite and come back to it on Sunday. I'll probably be playing this thing. I'll start it around 10 for those who want to tune in, along with the other gobs of material that I'll usually throw at people. So, yeah, get back to you with that then. But there's more to come, so don't go away. You're tuned to Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org. This is called Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert, as I sometimes call myself. You can reach me off air at 423-4833. If you had problems with bathrooms, problems with the police, problems with Parks and Rec Rangers, I can't solve them at all, I can assure you, not a bit. But I can publicize them, and I can get your account, and you can get your story out there. That's something I'm interested in doing, because I believe that public exposure ultimately is the way to change things, or at least it's what I think I can do to at least move in that direction.
Jerry Falwell's God was standing by the elevator while we were talking about the party, so we had to invite him. Secretly, we were all wishing that he wouldn't come because he's vengeful and jealous and he tends to smite people. And of course, he knew we were thinking that. So it made him all the more determined to show up and punish us. And I wanted to invite my God, but I couldn't find him. But Jerry Falwell's God is hard to miss. The gossamer robe and the beard down to here and the button that says, "What would Jesus do?" And sure enough, you know, day of the party, there he was at the door. And he spake he. Saying, "I am come." And I knew there was a joke there. But Jerry Falwell's God will not be mocked. So I said, "Come in."
Jerry Falwell's God. Jerry Falwell's God.
Now, I'm no heavenly host, but I throw a decent party. And there were people of all kinds there. Black, white, Swedish, Norwegian, the whole human spectrum. And right away, Jerry Falwell's God found the two people who would listen to him and began speaking in a voice so loud it made the Beastie Boys sound like the Vienna Boys Choir. and he made the lame to walk. And these were my friends, so they were still lame, but they could walk. And he turned the loaves to fishes and the Oreos to Hydrox. Subtle, I thought. And he divided up the room, divided he, saying, gays here, lesbians here, pagans here, abortionists, feminists, civil libertarians, people for the American way, and frankly, some of us did not know where to stand. I went with the lesbians.
Cherry Fall Wells Gone. Cherry Fall Wells Gone.
And he pointed his huge finger at each group in turn, saying, I blame you and you and you who have secularized society and cast me out of the town square. And I thought, man, you are the town square. He said, lo, I have lifted the veil of protection, for the end days are here and the judgment is nigh, where I will draw the faithful to heaven and leave the unrepentant to walk a desolate earth. And I thought, more polyester for the rest of us. And he spat fire, and he rained toads, and he brought forth seven plagues of seven bowls. And finally, I just said, look, I'll tell you one thing Jesus would not do. Jesus would not wreck a guy's party. And Jesus would not preach hate. And Jesus would not stand in the rubble and say, I told you so. And Jesus would not use an international catastrophe to score points for some misogynistic, narrow, homophobic, anti-Semitic interpretation of his life and teaching. And if people are jealous and judgmental and vengeful and violent, maybe it's because you made them in your image. And if people have cast you out of the town square, maybe it's because you are a finger-pointing, moralizing, rageaholic stone drag who gives deities a bad name. And if people have turned away from your word, maybe it's because you have spinach in your teeth. And he smote me.
Cherry Falwell's gone. Cherry Falwell's gone.
And that was Cherry Falwell's God. Before that, Psychedelic Relic. And before that, Pumping Irony. Three by Roy Zimmerman from Homeland Security. And looks like this album was, oh boy, 15 years old, something like that. Can't quite find a date on it, but I imagine some of you folks still remember Jerry Falwell, who was a right-wing reactionary preacher. So let's jump now to someone who's doing a storage program, day and night storage. You've heard him before, and he's you got some favorable comments from a couple people I've been talking with, Brent. I don't want you to go to your head, but it sounds like things are going pretty well. How are things happening at Day and Night Storage?
I don't know. Who are you hearing
from? I think Jennifer was her name. She used to work at the River Street Campground.
cool. Yeah. Things are going good with the storage program. We had an open house on Saturday. So the training wheels are off. We're official. We are doing well with the neighborhood and the tenants of the building that we're in and the landlord. So that's nothing short of miraculous in its concept for the design of the program and our outreach. And then we're just going from here. Winter shelter bed deficit is something that's being discussed behind the scenes with the city and the county. Homeless Services Center, Salvation Army, Association of Faith Communities, all getting in the mix, including Warming Center. we stand apart because we are the backup emergency system that makes itself available to every single person who sleeps outside on those nights that we do open based on a temperature threshold.
Now, are these, are the city and the county actually this time kicking you any funding?
I'm not really supposed to talk about it too much. It looks like, well, let's start with the Salvation Army. They're helping a little bit with some materials and maybe 10 nights of backup bed space. Then it looked like the city might be eclipsing that by putting some beds over there. I don't know. There's some talk. I don't know what's going on. I'm not at all of the adult tables. I'm still at kind of the kids' table in these meetings. But I think the county is thinking about supporting warming centers in our effort to increase bed capacity, while the replacement to the traditional 100 beds, as we've grown to expect, is going to change in a number of ways. One, several different locations likely, and two, some potentially confusing way to access. I don't think all of these beds are going to be low bearing drop-in beds. I think some of them are going to be, for instance, a slight increase at the Faith Community Shelter, which is the, Association of Faith Communities, and then Homeless Services Center might increase. But as we know, that also will not be low barrier drop-in. So that, to my mind, doesn't add to eclipse the 100 missing beds that the former women's shelter. And then VFW opening 60 that I also take off the table because of the closure of the camp, which is a 60 people. Now, we don't expect that all 60 people from the camp will be going over to the winter shelter. But right now, all of that taken has me pretty concerned about the number of true low-barrier drop-in shelter beds that will be available. I'm trying to act right. I'm trying to be proactive, trying to allow the county a safe space to work with me, because I know they're frightened of me making the larger statement to the community that there is 100 beds short. They don't want that. They're trying to make it look like there's a zero deficit, but by stringing all these things together, and to their, we all count beds differently. I understand that, but the way I count beds is that, that's determinant upon my being the director of a warming center program, shifting the temperature threshold up or down based on the number of beds, the needs, as we call it, and the amount of community orders.
Yeah, let me butt in here, Brent, because I think I don't even think it's a matter of counting beds. I think it's, you're talking about a drop-in shelter. There are a certain number of drop-in beds, and there, the increase in the number of drop-in beds is, the number of drop-in beds compared with last winter is a fraction of what it was. I mean, they may have expanded programs for people who get into programs, but that requires all kinds of different things depending on the programs. It requires a path to housing over at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it. I don't know what it requires the Association of Faith Communities. I guess you have to be severely, the priority is given to those who are.
Brent, sorry, we have a little problem with this.
Huh. I don't know what went wrong there. Okay, we're back. So let me ask you a question that's a little bit independent of this. One of the things Jennifer said was that she was very impressed with how you've cleaned up the neighborhood, so to speak, or people in the neighbors who came to your opening situation, your opening celebration last. What's wrong with this? Okay, we're good. Said that, people were no longer camping out and crapping and leaving their property around because you were acting as the neighborhood policeman. That wasn't her word, but that was sort of the implication. But when you and I talked, you said it wasn't that you would walk over to people and say, get out or I won't serve you. Don't camp near here, or if you do, you won't be able to use my storage program, but rather that you would say to them, if you're here, the police will probably give you a ticket. Now, there's a difference between those two things. What's the accurate description?
No, we don't say anything like that. We say, hi, we have a couple of things to offer. firstly, we have a storage program on site that we would like you to know about. You know, we say we can help you lighten your load, all that. If you're not going to work with us in that program, if you are going to accept that program, that means you can't camp or congregate within 100 yards. Now, of course, that's a problem because people, you know, we're reducing the space where they can be, and that's already the problem with the lay of the land. There's a reduction in space. We wish we didn't have to do that. That's our relationship with the landlord, all right? That's the only way we got into this unit, by creating that. Also, it helps us not blow up the neighborhood around the program. But if they're not going to work with us and stay camping, you know, on the other side of the fence, we say things like, here's a garbage bag. Please, if you let's not poop on the ground surface. And we try to tell them where all the available bathrooms are. Of course, in that location, there are virtually none in the neighborhood. And then we have Sharps containers. We have water. You know, and check in if you need warm clothing, things like that. We just try to, you know, whether they're in the program or not, that we can help them with their experience. But what we're trying to do, of course, is if they're going to camp there, they're having a lighter impact. Now, virtually everybody camping in that region has either joined our program, which means per their agreement they can't congregate in the neighborhood, or they've elected to not camp nearby. We don't tell them to go away. We don't tell them the police will come. We don't say anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So strangely, there's just nobody there anymore. And it actually feels, on one hand, you know, wildly successful, and on the other hand, very creepy. I don't know why they're not there. We're not trying to make them feel, you know, any less comfortable. They can still camp there. We're not running them off or making any threats or anything. You know, I have a heart for people camping wherever they are.
Yeah, I know that. Although, I mean, it's interesting. It does sound a bit like what the Homeless Lack of Services Center does in saying, "We'll kick you out of our program if we find you loitering out front." It's not. I mean, it's not the same thing. And it sounds like you alternately are saying, "No, we'll try to help you, but you can't really be a part of our program unless you agree to these conditions." I mean, I think there's a difference between those two things.
I mean, we got to look at also. You know, it's easy to make that judgment against Homeless Services Center. The question is, how do you run a program in these neighborhoods, given that you are importing, a population? Homeless Services Center has a pre-existing, you know, it's just really difficult to do both, to offer services and then to also have the entire street become host to people camping. I think somehow what I'm trying to demonstrate here is the way we've done it has struck a perfect balance with all parties. Nobody's bitching. Not one person sleeping outside has complained. They feel completely supported and helped. And then the neighborhood, we've just somehow struck that right balance, which I wish, and it's similarly with the warming center versus other shelter programs. It's kind of in the way you deal with it. And you know, we don't send security guards. We're out there, you know, asking if they need anything. And we can help them with, you know, so many people who are camping out there did join our program, and their life is much easier for it. They're happy to camp elsewhere if they can keep a large amount of their gear with us. So
let me ask about other things you were doing that also interest me, although you've mentioned in the past less so because, you know, you're focusing on this 24-hour day and night shelter. Any news about what's happening around the city regarding closed bathrooms, fenced off areas, campgrounds that are being ticketed and moved along?
Yeah, I think we got to keep calling. You know, I think the Keith McHenry and some of that group is kind of missing a little bit of it. You know, we have to say, you know, that Grand Street Park has a fence around it, and it is locked 24 hours a day now. No access to that bathroom for that entire. So when you look at the fact that San Lorenzo bathroom has been locked closed, and the Loudon Nelson bathroom has been locked closed, and Grant Street Park bathroom has been locked closed, and those two parks are completely inaccessible, that's a huge reduction in space where people can just sit on a bench or sit on the grass during the daytime. A huge problem within the community all of a sudden. Additionally, the strip in front of the Homeless Services Center now has orange fencing around it. You know, and then the double, just the blitzkrieg, as we call it, of out in all the natural areas. So there's a real difficulty with the population of people sleeping outside. Additionally, people think that they're not, you know, writing those citations, camping citations anymore. We know for a fact that they're writing every other citation.
Yeah. I just went to the...
It's important to constantly be aware of all that.
I went to City Hall today, and I finally got my Public Records Act around tickets issued by Parks and Rec for the last 4 months. And there is a reduction in the number of Parks and Rec tickets for trespass in a closed area, but they're still writing them. There's at least, 70 or 80 citations or more. And the overwhelming majority of them go to homeless people or people 115 Coral Street, transient or general delivery addresses.
Yeah.
And also, almost every single one includes a 24-hour stay-away order, which, of course, doesn't have any kind of judicial authenticity or anything. I'm going to have to roll on you, Brent. Let me give you the last word because I'm kind of rushing, but maybe I can catch up with you on Sunday again.
Thank you. So we have a fundraiser for the Warming Center on Saturday night, 6:30 at the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal Downtown. Please come, everybody. This is how we pay for. We're plunking down about $7,000 to $10,000 on new floor pads and blankets, getting ready for an influx of more people. So it's come to the door, 6:30, tickets at the door. It's pretty pricey, $45 a head, but you get really, really good food. We always go all out. There's live music, and there'll be entertainment. And we build community as we serve the community, so you're going to be a part of something completely fresh when we consider a lot of the pre-existing community. As always, Warming Center Program Everything, meaning Warming Center Program at Gmail, warmingcenterprogram.com, Facebook. And now we have a new hotline. Brace yourself for this bit of awesomeness. The new hotline is 246-1234. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Brent. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And let's take a musical break.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do some love songs, too. And so Cardinal Mahoney, a man who puts the PR in priest, he wants to establish a lay council on sexual misconduct. And where do I sign? And I think that, if he wants priests to be celibate, he should just allow them to get married.
Love your neighborhood priest. He needs your firm support at least. 'Cause nobody goes celibate just for the hell of it. Won't you lend a hand to help him wrestle with his beast? Love that guy in the frock and introduce him to the new kid on the block. His God-given proclivities won't desist till he's deceased. Love your neighborhood priest. Love your neighborhood priest. The pulpit ought not be policed, 'cause you know it isn't really a case of pedophilia. It's just that there's a lamb within the flock who's gotten fleeced. Love that guy in the collar, but only if you're 4 feet tall, not any taller. His parish may be perishing, but his membership's increased. Love your neighborhood priest. And oh, you know the story about the famed parochial academy, Our Lady of the Angels Predatory, where they teach anatomy by getting all even atomy. Love your father confessor. Whatever penance he may give you, tell him yes, sir. And you may find his fingers are Roman, maybe even greased. Love that guy. He works the hood for you. Love your neighborhood, so tell him his work was good for you. Love that priest.
And that was Love Your Neighborhood Priest from Homeland Security. So as mentioned before, there's going to be a
a rally on November 15th, Thursday at 4, in front of the main post office, when some camper experts are going to lead us to a campground, or maybe camper amateurs. I'm not sure how expert or amateur they may be. The idea being, of course, to find a place that the city, well, the theory is people together are better than people apart, but of course, it's likely to be a rocky road because camping is illegal in Santa Cruz, and even though the law is that law is now itself illegal, the city is likely to try to enforce it and has been enforcing the same thing as Brent Adams was saying through other ordinances. But we're looking for a good campground site. We've kind of come up with a number of ideas with the understanding that any particular campground site is likely to be fenced off, as they fenced off Loudoun Nelson, you know, for maintenance, or maybe because they want to plant some flowers, or, you know, to make sure that they can reseed the area with grass. I mean, there are all kinds of good reasons to drive people who are looking for a survival spot away. So tomorrow, on Friday, I guess it would be the 9th, there's going to be a meeting of a group called Home Free. It's going to be at the parking lot right next to the downtown library, across from the old Sentinel building, currently the Cruzio building. And they're meeting to kind of organize for this November 15th protest. And they're going to be circulating a poll, a winter survey poll, which attempts to kind of look at the issue of where can this campground go? Where do people who are outside want it to go? And this is going to be a place where people just plop down their sleeping bags and sleep until they're forced to move along by police or whatever. And some of the choices that are being offered, and there are, of course, places to write in choices, are City Hall, Poganip, outside the post office, along the levee, at the sports stadium, or in the parking lot nearby, where the 24-hour storage used to be, near the railroad tracks, which covers a lot of territory, Laurel Park, next to the infamous Loudoun Nelson's closed bathrooms, at the Front Street parking lot, which is next to bathrooms that are sometimes open, Cedar Street parking lot, but of course it's illegal to be in a parking lot for more than 15 minutes, and even then only if you're parking or retrieving a vehicle. So all these are legal risks. The sidewalk near Coral Street, which has now been fenced off or meshed off with environmental protection devices, of course. Under the bridges, which has also been meshed off and also has been outfitted with, in some places, so-called mosquito devices. And that isn't where they unleash mosquitoes at you, but rather a high-pitched sound designed to drive away poor and homeless people and anyone else who gathers there. Harvey West, at a beach, and those are just a few of the places. So if you're interested, come on down at 5:30 and meet with folks, or come to the Food Not Bombs rallies, which I should say meals, but there are a lot of people there. And fill out a poll. Where do you think we should go? What's a good idea on November 15th? And while you're pondering that one, you can also probably go online. I'm probably going to put that up on Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you want to find it there, you'll be able to find it there as well. Let's see if I can round up a few more Thursday afternoon voices. So let's check in at the Red Church from, I guess it's 3 or 4 days ago, last Monday. That's the Calvary Episcopal Church, which has a 6 o'clock meal every week, where I'm prowling the line looking to see who's got some new information, new news.
So I'm here at the Red Church. I'm talking with
the Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher, you say you've gotten some fortunate returns finally?
Yes, I did. I got a bigger bike, a nicer one, and my trailer came back fully intact, and I got an amplifier to be a rock star tonight for an hour. Down at the post office, Jamba Juice. I can't wait. I've never played my guitar electric.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's got this little mini cube, and it's got a few effects, but boy, I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to probably give myself the worst migraine in the world, but it'll be worth it.
Maybe a migraine to a few others as well?
No, I play beautifully, but the guitar plays me. I don't mind.
Oh, interesting. Anything happened to you otherwise on the streets you want to pass on?
I was able to sleep in the middle of Pacific the other day.
You were saying that before.
Oh, my gosh. It was grace of the universe, I think, right
during
there.
During the first Friday.
The Saturday, I think.
Saturday.
Yeah, the street fair. It was nice. I was sleeping in because I knocked myself out with my own guitar. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. I see a little scar over your right eye.
Oh, God. He removed it all the way to the bone, man. It sounded like ting. And I was out right there in front of the Verb.
Are you? I heard some people have died in the last couple months. Do you, mm-hmm. you know? I know I've heard about Mouse. That was some time ago. But mm-hmm. anybody else you know?
They caught the arsonist. They caught the arsonist.
And because they say so, or because you have inside information?
I have senior information.
Well, perhaps we don't want to reveal it on to the entire community unless you want that done.
Well, yes, I like catching arsons.
Okay. What's your information?
It's probably very reliable from the man that caught the man.
Uh-huh. And how was this person caught, and who did he what happened?
I don't. They can't give any details.
Oh. You mean they're unable to speak, or they just don't want us to know?
Still under investigation.
Oh, yeah.
Arson is an R on your jacket.
Uh-oh.
You don't last long.
It burns me up, I got to tell you.
Well, it could possibly.
Oh, yeah.
There's
true.
A chance of that.
Right. Well, that's more chance if you got a nice big fancy house, though.
Or
if your house going up.
Or if you're cooking some oil and you use acetone. That's the wrong thing to do.
Well, that doesn't sound like arson. That sounds like a fuck up.
Yeah, there's a guy with 20% of his body burned right now in this room because he did that.
Oh, wow.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he tried. Well, he's goofy, but yeah, 20%. He's lucky he's alive.
Well, if he wants to be interviewed, tell him.
The guy with the mouse hat and the turquoise in front of him.
Oh, I know that man.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
That's safe to do over the radio like that, isn't it?
I'll ask him if he wants to be interviewed. We'll see. Julie, thank you. We've been talking.
The Dreamcatcher Bipolar Bear Keeper number 2.
Thank you, sir.
That's D.C., otherwise known as D.C. Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't know. Okay, HUD says that if you live in an RV, you're not homeless unless you're asked and you agree if you're homeless or not. Because apparently somebody in Southern California decided to do a survey of unhoused, unsheltered individuals, and they did not count people who were in RVs. And then some activists got mad, and then they got a hold of HUD, and HUD made a statement a couple weeks ago that said it do not count people who live in RVs as being homeless unless you ask them first. For whatever that is worth.
I guess in theory somebody could have an RV and could also be, you know, have a house at the same time.
But if they live in Santa Cruz, they might not have that RV for too long.
not for too long, no, particularly with a parking restriction.
But fortunately, I know where there's lots of RVs for dirt cheap, so it's going to work out.
And we've been talking with?
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz full-timer.
Thank you. Suggestion that a sports stadium, the Warriors sports stadium, has been a good idea, and that it would be a good idea for a number of reasons. It would not only be a spacious area. And that there, it would be regarded as a philanthropic enterprise. Thank you, sir. That's from an anonymous old-timer. Happening? Anything new coming up this week that you want to pass on for folks? Particularly starting on Thursday, since that's when this airs.
Oh, that's the big, for any of your folks who are interested in this Armistice 100 celebration, there's going to be a gathering at United Methodist Church on California on Saturday night, and then all day Sunday at the Veterans Memorial Building. Don't call it the Vets Hall. They're going to have a big celebration and panel and discussion of Armistice 100. It's the 100th anniversary of the end of World War
One. Hey, all the War One vets will be there.
Yeah, well, those who are still surviving in Santa Cruz, so they'll all be here. And, of course, you'll probably be analyzing, as you always do, the results of our election, which is happening tomorrow. critiquing the winners and boo-hooing the losers, as you always do, and wondering why there weren't more votes cast for Steve Plaich.
Steve Plaich, of course, will be the write-in. Actually, they don't have write-in, really. It's considered a...
Brad Snyder asked me the other day. He says, I was looking on, I just voted. I didn't find your name on the ballot.
You see,
I said they only gave me one bite at that apple. So
you chose not to bite the poisoned apple again.
Bite the poisoned apple this time. So,
so there is this incident. Where exactly is all this happening this weekend?
The United Methodist Church is on California. That's Saturday night, and then
where exactly is that?
It's on California between Bay and the circles, basically.
And everyone is welcome.
Everyone's welcome. Yeah. And I think it's, I'm not sure they're charging, but even if they are, then nobody gets turned away for lack of funds. And then all day long at the Veterans Memorial Building.
Not to call it the Vets Hall.
Please don't call it the Vets Hall. So you know, people have worked on it for several months, and regardless of how you fall in terms of trying to change a name and whether or not that's going to really exert any, you know, influence on our warring and war-clad nation, it's a good thing to support, and they're good folks, so I would give it a shot.
Okay. Anything coming up at the ACLU? I know you were at a board meeting last month, I believe.
Actually, we have two lengthy letters going to the Board of Supervisors and City Council right after the election talking about housing as a libertarian issue and housing as a civil rights issue and just basically decrying the lack of shelter and the like. Those will be for public view after the election when they send them out to the Board of Supervisors and the City Council. Of course, there will be public records at that point anyway.
Sure. There's a meeting with the infamous, I should say the famous, or the little known, Tony Elliott, head of Parks and Rec, tomorrow. Will you be showing up there?
Meeting with him at 2 o'clock, Rabbi Phil Posner and Ursula and myself, we're going to see what...
I'm going to sneak in.
Well, May, you would be welcome. We'll see what he has to say. 2 o'clock at Parks and Rec. Anyway, I have to...
Get to the bagels.
Somebody... I got to talk to Joe.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, a suspicious person who's...
I don't want to talk on your...
Nothing new coming up? Now, was it because you were criticized for doing that, or...
No.
You're tired of talking on the radio.
I'm tired.
You have nothing to say.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
I'm not even going to say who this man is. I'm going to show the kind of respect that I probably shouldn't be showing. I just want to ask one question.
Okay.
And that is, have you been able to find work in Santa Cruz here?
No.
Well...
No, that's the question. I'm looking.
Well, keep looking.
I will.
Just like many others.
Yeah.
But you have found lodging.
I have a house.
That's even better.
I have to pay for the property tax. Yeah, the more the better.
Yes. Thank you. Winter's viral poll here, and getting a small turnout. I'd say half a dozen, maybe a little bit more responses of 30 or 40 turned up. Did you get the poll?
I don't know what the best place is.
I don't either, really.
I mean, I think if it's...
You want to make an enemy of your life, let them put them on the levee. I will not put up with that. I am the woman who's out there all day and most of...
Well, then you should propose something else.
Yes. Anything else. I don't understand the purpose. This is to make a campus anywhere.
Well, this is because on the 15th there will be people gathering because the campground is being closed at River Street.
Yes.
So the idea is we don't expect we can immediately go to a campground and be unmolested because that's not what they do in Santa Cruz. But we're pointing out that it's needed and that's how we're doing it. What's the first place we should go to is really the question.
Well, I wouldn't suggest under the bridges. It's going to turn into a mud hole as soon as it rains. The river's up already. If it rains heavily, they're just going to get rained out anyway.
Well, they'll probably be driven out by the police before they're rained out is my...
Oh, okay.
In other words, they'll probably be the first... This is the first night thing. And the question is, where should they go on the first night? I didn't suggest the parking lot next to the Calvary Episcopal or the Calvary Episcopal lawn, though those are also options as far as I can see. And who knows where people will go.
Well, I don't think outside the post office is practical, depending on how many people show up. There's just not enough room there.
Right.
Same thing probably at City Hall. I don't really want people up in Poganuk making a mess out of everything and destroying the landscape either.
Just no place for them.
Well, no, I'm not saying that.
I know, but others are. That's what they say. Others say that.
Yes, I think they could create a campground somewhere, just an open space where people can pitch tents and spend the winter. Yes.
Right. The question is, what are we going to do since they're not going to do anything? That's the issue.
I'm doing everything I can.
I know you are. I'm not blaming you, kiddo.
No, I'm not taking responsibility.
Well, you're such so irresponsible. But you did vote. Was it Tweedledee or Tweedledum you voted for?
Probably a combination of both.
Very good. Very good. And we've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Mary.
Thank you, Mary. Anything else you want to pass on?
I take the levee very personally.
Well, I understand. You do a lot of cleaning up.
Damn much time there cleaning it up and setting it back to rights from people who have no respect for it.
Put up trash receptacles that could pick up trash, and they could also put in some kind of sanitation porta potties.
Make an amazing difference on the population who is housed in this community if people cleaned up after themselves.
That's true, but it's hard to clean up your own shit if you have no place to go, isn't it?
That's true, but you know what? I'm confronted every day with places where they could bury it, and they don't.
Of course, you got to kind of carry your shovel with you and that sort of thing. No?
No. I dig in the sand and the dirt out there with sticks.
You can, I suppose. You're more dutiful than many, I've got to say.
I just really love and respect the levee, and I have no problem with the people who camp out there because they need a place to sleep. None. Who are respectful.
How about putting in porta potties there so they could use?
That would be great.
So we should be perhaps.
Don't have a problem with that.
Indeed, in fact, but
put those under the bridges.
There you go.
Might get in the way of those little red things that are.
Little red things.
Not my favorite vehicles, but.
Yeah, well, they have those little, you know, what do they call them, mosquito machines that's supposed to drive people away from under the levee. You know about those?
No.
They're high-pitched sound devices that were put in about 2013 under Scott Collins when he was the assistant city manager. They put out an unpleasant but very high-pitched sound, which they have found tends to just deter people from gathering. I tried to find out the exact location of all these devices. All he would do is give me the receipts that indicate they were purchased by the city and the history that they were gotten, but not he wouldn't say where they were. So.
I'm sure if they were turned on, I'd have noticed.
I would have thought so, too. But he said they were, you know, being used, and maybe they just turned them off.
All over that levee.
Well, I know one was near the bank that is at Soquel and Front Street. There used to be an area where people would gather on the path near the levee. I don't know if you remember that.
Gather there.
I thought they closed that off and called it a, I don't know, conservation zone or something.
I don't think there's anything closed off over there. It's full of California roses that we're all interested in not planting any more of.
It's a sad day for the horticulturalists.
I have no problem with people who camp on the levee who are respectful of their environment.
And
I spend all day every day fighting to keep other people's trash who are not respectful out of the river.
And get paid incredible amounts of money for doing so, right?
Not quite.
Not exactly. No. And we've been talking again with
Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
The dawn and the dark of night, and if you go, no one may follow. That love before your steps alone.
Well, there you have it, a moment of religious contemplation in song here at the Calvary Episcopal.
So it's after the meal, the Red Church meal, around 20 to 7 on November 5th. And I am chatting with conscience and action activist, also Huff activist, Ursula. Hi, Ursula.
Hello.
And you're looking over these strips, the winter survival campground or pole, kind of asking homeless people where this November 15th protest that talks about going to set up a campground. Sort of skeptical I've been of this protest, whether it's actually going to, you know, lead to anything of other than simply another one-night march and everybody then goes home or whatever, or Although they say that, big edifices are built out of little stones or something like that. Maybe you need big stones, too.
I agree with that one. I agree.
She agrees. And you, this is a poll that I kind of cooked up quickly. It has to do with suggestions as to where people can go after they assemble at the post office 4 o'clock on November 15th, a Thursday, coming up, actually. It'll be a week from probably the date of this broadcast, if this is broadcast on Thursday the 8th. And what did you find in your conversations with people? And also, I guess you haven't really looked through these carefully because there's a number of them. But what did people made their own suggestions, and there was a number of so what and people began to think about the issue. What and you said you had a lot of fun.
Yes, I had a great deal of fun because people looked at the thing and came up with their own ideas, and even sharing parts of other people's ideas with them helped them come up with their own ideas too. So it just is good to feel the interaction and the thoughts and the feelings that people have. So it's terrific.
Anything particular come out of it that struck you?
Well, you mean besides one person thought it should be on the Coonerty clan property.
That's the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz,
yes.
Or the family that manages it downtown.
And I kept thinking about how much money they get for keeping their bathrooms open to the public.
Some of the public.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I like that. I think that would be a really good turn of events. But some people are really, really have a good opinion. Like one person here said, extension of contract. Don't move. Reinstate the dream catcher. So maybe just refusing to move.
From the River Street campground. Or the Boneyard Barbed Wire campground.
I think that's a great one. And another one was 10 acres of Wilder Ranch State Park.
Would that be 10 acres and a mule, or just 10 acres? Probably just 10 acres. The mule was back in the 1860s.
A mule might be fun.
but probably more of a, some kind of a Volvo might be better.
You know, it could be a pet for the city of the homeless. I like that idea.
Showing how stubborn those homeless people are.
And the nice idea of the Wilder Ranch is that it has a bike path leading to it. And so that would be really good. People could come back and forth.
So the bike thieves could bike in, do their thievery, their reassembling of the bikes, and go over most of that. But you caught some of it, so thank you, Ursula.
You are so welcome.
And that about winds it up for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. There is a Tunes for Troubled Times event, 7:30 tomorrow, Friday, November 9th, at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, but it's $10 donation. Not sure how free that is, if it is free, or how much of a donation it is. Original songs, new and old, with latest artwork, guest group The Healers, featuring Gail Swan, Claire Paul, Karen Katz, and also Song Nelson with a song. So I just sort of thought I would mention that. I got it in my email, and you can check it out. Also, of course, as I mentioned before, Friday, tomorrow, there's going to be a meeting of Home Free, a group of activists concerned with preparing for the Camp Quest activity on November 15th, which is going to begin at the post office at 4 o'clock. But they're going to be kind of doing some scheming and dreaming, so check it out if you're interested. It's in the parking lot next to the library, the main downtown library. That's on, Church Street. Let's go out with the final number from Roy Zimmerman, and I think, that'll be it until next time. Get in touch with me by phone at 423-4833 if you want to get in touch at all.
And so here's a song on a different subject.
Think different, said the slogan on the billboard sign. Right on, said everybody. as they drove by in line. On the billboard was Albert Einstein, different thinker, extraordinaire, who cared nothing for convention or computers or his hair. Think different, everybody, everybody, just be you. Or think different, everybody, 'cause the billboard told you to. I remember a couple years ago, someone purchased Einstein's eyes. Not the insight, not the outlook, not the vision, just the eyes. They look good too, as far as dead eyes go. And they followed you around the room, and they're sure to fetch a fortune in the next big organ boom. Oh, think different, everybody, everybody, just be you. Oh, think different, everybody, like they do on Madison Avenue.
If they really wanted to think different, they would have put Theodore Kaczynski up there.
I've been thinking about collecting little parts of famous dead people just to put them all together, have one really famous dead person, and then I'd license this person's image to sell some cigarette or brassiere, maybe even have his own Christmas special with Alien Gonzalez and John Rocker. And I think it was Albert Speer, who said, think different, everybody, everybody, don't blend in. Or think different, everybody, on the count of three, let's begin. Some 24-year-old silk-suited substance abuser who'd shove his mother down an escalator for a shot at the Nabisco account told you to.
FCC agents are nothing but pure dog meat. They're just, they're nothing but the lowest form of life. FCC is probably the worst thing that ever, you know, the worst scourge that's ever come upon the face of the earth.
Nobody thunk it. Nobody knew.
Hi, no, this is Coral Reef. Fill it in for a one and only.
Cows are one.
Uncle Dennis.
He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary.
I couldn't find the theme song for Dennis, but it'll be coming up. And tonight, I'll be playing music from the 60s, 70s, a little bit of the 80s. Hope you enjoy it.
Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around because the stakes were so high.
Free Radio Santa Cruz!
Radio. Music should be free, and so should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi.
This is Jello Biafra.
Radioactive.
This is Boots Riley from The Coup.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls.
Hello there, this is Tom Morello.
Peace, be still. This is Azeem checking in from Oakland, California.
This is Jim Page.
Yo, what the deal? This is Immortal Technique.
This is so-and-so from 15.
This is Michelle Shuck.
This is Mike Park.
This is Thomas from Striking New Air.
And whenever I'm running from the police, I gotta find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
101.1 Freak Radio.
Freak Radio.
On your FM dial has been successfully flying the skull and crossbones for the past 10 years.
Amen! FM Hallelujah!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz is a vital part of this country's independent media.
Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Live stream online at www.freakradio.org.
Music should be free. So should radio.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Remember to tune in from the cream to the dregs with Uncle Dennis every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Music from the 60s and the 70s brought to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz and nowhere else.